Welcome again, everybody, to another episode of Inside Curling. Not just another episode, a special episode. If you like chocolate, Kevin, do you like chocolate?
Of course, Jimmy.
You look like you like chocolate, Warren. Do you have a sweet tooth?
I like it too much, Jim.
That a boy, good. Well, you would go to Switzerland if you like chocolate. A little Swiss chocolate. But no, this week it is wrapping up a couple of big curling events. We're talking about the World Mixed Doubles is on there. We're going to get an update from Warren and all that. We got the World Seniors going on. Next week, starting Tuesday in Olds, is the final Grand Slam event. And Kev, you sat down with Kevin Cooey, an interview you did a while ago, and I listened to it. And I never, you know, I can never understand, how was his brother up in the Northwest Territories all the time? Where did all this start? How'd the Cooey family? And he answered all those questions and a bunch more. So
that was interesting, wasn't it? Some of the stuff I had no idea. It was great.
He didn't even know where he lived.
Well, I think there's still days when Kevin doesn't know.
Stick around. We're going to have a few laughs, apparently. And we'll bring you up to speed on what's going on in the curling world. Don't go away.
Last rock, eighth end, up by two.
I don't think I'm white.
I don't think you are either.
Oh.
It's clean. Don't kill it, Ben.
Line's really good. Line's good. Right on the button, guys. Right
here. Last stone for Kevin Martin. They want it on the button. The sweepers are watching it. Fans are on their feet. Kevin Martin goes out. As a champion, cuts him to one. He will win his final Grand Slam, taking the Players' Championship. Talk about putting an exclamation mark at the end of a career. All he had to do was cut him down. Kevin Martin can celebrate. He is a champion.
Okay, we're back. I'm still laughing, Kevin. You said Kevin Cooey doesn't even know where he lives sometimes. I'm waiting for your phone call from him. We got a bunch of stuff going on over in Switzerland. Like we said, we're going to get up to date on that. We'd like to acknowledge and thank the five great sponsors that we have for Inside Curling. Today's show is brought to you by Sports Interaction, Coyote Tractor, and of course their Grand Slam, the final Grand Slam event, Goldline, Nestle Boost, and Meridian. So, Warren, the World's Mixed Doubles is happening in Switzerland. Team Canada's over there. Give us an update, Warren. What's going on with them and the rest of the field?
Well, it's been an interesting week in Geneva, but let's go back to the start and describe how this whole thing is put together and where things sit right now. So they start out with 20 teams in two pools. After the round robin, three teams qualified from each pool. The second-place team from A played the third-place team from B, and the same thing, the second-place team from B played the third-place team from A. The two winners then went against one of the first-place teams, and those two winners will play tomorrow for the World Mixed Doubles title. So here's how things were after the round robin. Pool A, three teams at 7-2, Switzerland, Sweden, Norway. In the draw shot challenge, Switzerland came out on top, so they're number one, Sweden number two, Norway number three. In Pool B, Scotland, Eve Muirhead, Bobby Lamy, great week going for them. They were at 9-0 in the round robin. Canada in second place at 8-1. And then Germany third, interesting, at 6-3. This meant Switzerland and Scotland received byes to the semifinal, while Canada would go against Norway in one of the qualifying games, and Germany would play Sweden in the other. In the Canadian game, they had control most of the way, but Jocelyn Peterson, with her last of the six, was attempting a raise on one of her own stones, looking at two Norwegian counters. The stone went straight on her, and in the end, Norway stole two to go in front 4-3. But Canada bounced back with a score of 2 in the 7th to lead 5-4 going home, but without the hammer. But in the 8th, Maya Ramsfell made a successful race takeout to score 2 and to win. And as we're going to talk about the next round, Ramsfell just had a phenomenal day. Great shot she made on more than one occasion. In the other qualifying game, Germany defeated Sweden 11-8. So the semifinals were set with Scotland versus Germany and Norway against Switzerland. Scotland soundly defeated Germany 8-3 in seven ends to keep its record clean and perfect. Now at 10-0, Switzerland went down to defeat at the hands of Norway 8-7. But what a spectacular shot Maya Ramsfell made in the eighth end to pick up three and force an extra end. The extra end wasn't easy either for Pats, as she had to make a perfect raised takeout or with a 10-foot run back to score a single point in 8-7 win. That was a really exciting game for anyone who watched it. So the final is set with four curlers that are pretty familiar to people in the curling world. Scotland, Eve Muirhead skipping with Bobby Lamy, and in Switzerland, Alina Patz and Sven Mikkel. So we're set for a phenomenal final tomorrow. Kevin, what do you think of all this?
Yeah, Warren, for sure. You've got Switzerland in the final, which is no big shock with Alina Patz, of course, won the last three worlds in a row with Sven Mikkel. Very strong, obviously. But then you got Eve Muirhead. So, and then you got one of the best sweepers in the world, arguably the best sweeper, but quite a few in the world that are super good. Certainly one of them, and Bobby Lamy. So Sven Mikkel as well, very strong sweeper. So I think there's a couple of components here that reach out, and that's how strong the female curler has to be making the first and last rock in the, for the most part, throwing the first and last and needing to be a high percentage. And of course, when you got two of the, well, you got the Olympic gold medalist and the world champ. So it can't get stronger than that. And then super strong sweeping. And that seems to be kind of the magic, you know, and no question in Canada's case with Brett Gallant, of course, you've got just one of the strongest sweepers too, but that's kind of what kind of jumps out to me. I also want to congratulate, Germany. That's fantastic to get into the bronze game against Norway, Pia-Lisa Schuli and Claudius Harsh. So I don't know those curlers and hope to meet them one day, but fantastic and, you know, good on them. So hopefully they'll play well in that bronze game.
It's really interesting, again, from a Canadian point of view. So this is an event that Canada has never won. And I thought Brent Gallant and Jocelyn Peterman would have a real good chance to be in there. But again, mixed doubles is an unpredictable scenario. I mean, I'm looking at two of the shots that Jocelyn Peterman made in that last game of the round robin against USA, two of the best curling shots that I've ever seen. And it scored 5 points in those two shots. Yet today, they didn't seem to be able to keep that going. So it's interesting from Canada's point of view. Another time, they're not going to have a chance to win that gold.
Or get on the podium at all, actually. So yes, you're right. But those two shots, that angle raise, Jocelyn threw with about, oh gee, solid board weight so she could stick the shooter. Incredible. And then the double raise. And do you notice how far the rock went past the, like the, after the double raise is made? Just enough weight.
Perfect.
So two, to your point, two as good a curling shots as you're going to see in our sport. You know, like obviously Jocelyn's extremely good. And then you've got Brett on the broom. It's so powerful. So, but yeah, you're right. And then just couldn't quite come up with the goods in the playoffs.
Obviously a bunch of parity, Warren, in mixed doubles, probably more than any other curling event.
It is. And I look at mixed doubles, it really brings out the talent of the players. If you haven't got all the shots and everything in your bag that you're going to need, it shows up real quickly. And, it's just, to me, again, extremely entertaining. You never know who's going to come out the victor. I mean, I look at that game today with Norway and Switzerland. You know, how many games in four-person curling do you see somebody three up playing the last end, going into an extra end? Not very often. And
right.
Some phenomenal shot-making in that last end.
And do they still have the same rules of the world level, Warren? Do they have the power play and all that stuff they can use?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's all the same.
It's all the same. Okay. That would make it easy, right? If they change the rules on you, that'd be a little tough.
It's tough enough as it is, Jim.
Yeah, no kidding. Also in Geneva, Warren, is the World Seniors. Tell us what's going on there and how's Team Canada doing there?
I hope you guys are sitting down because this, again, you got two events here, women and men, and they're both structured slightly differently. So I'll need to explain what's going on with them both. So let's start with the senior women. They started with 13 teams in two pools. One pool had six, the other seven. Candice Sherry Anderson was in pool A with seven teams. Similar to the mixed doubles, at the end of the round robin, three teams from each pool would advance to the playoffs. The two groups went directly to the semifinals. The other four teams played in two qualification games. The winners of those games advanced to the semifinals, and the two winners are now in the finals. So at the end of the round robin in Group A, Scotland finished first with a record of 6-0, and Canada was second at 5-1. And Kevin, you mentioned Ireland and the seniors, they were in there at 4-2 in third place. In Group B, four teams finished with a record of 3-2, Finland, Switzerland, USA, and Latvia. Through the use of the draw shot challenge, the final ranking was Finland first, Switzerland second, and the USA third. This meant that Scotland and Finland would go directly to the semifinal. In the semifinal qualifying games, however, Canada was pitted against the USA while Switzerland was playing Ireland. Not a good day for Canada's Sherry Anderson, as she went down to defeat at the hands of the USA 4-3, and at the same time, Switzerland defeated Ireland 8-5. This set the stage for the semifinal, with Scotland against Switzerland and the USA versus Finland. Switzerland defeated Scotland 7-6 in an extra end, while the USA defeated Finland 8-4. So the stage is set for the gold medal final, USA versus Switzerland, and the bronze will have Scotland versus Finland. Now over to the men's side. A little different. 21 teams were placed into three groups, seven in each group. End of the round robin teams in each group were ranked 1-3. The top two teams in each group, plus the two third-ranked teams with a better draw shot distance, qualified for the quarterfinals. Following the round robin, here's how the top eight teams were determined. In Pool A, Canada first, USA second, and Italy third. In Pool B, Sweden first, Czech Republic second, Switzerland third. And in Pool C, Germany first, Scotland second, and Belgium third. Belgium didn't make it because they wanted to have this only eight teams to go forward. They would have made the ninth team. So the third rank in Pool A was Italy. The third rank in Pool B was Switzerland. But Belgium had the worst draw shot challenge, so they were eliminated. In the quarterfinals, Sweden defeated Italy 9-2. Czech Republic over Scotland 7-5. It was Germany 6, USA 5. And Canada defeated Switzerland 12-4. So the stage was set for the semifinal, which had Sweden versus Czech Republic and Canada against Germany. Canada's Wade White and his Canadian foursome came through with flying colors. They defeated Germany by a score of 11-5, while the Czech Republic defeated Sweden 8-6. So the final will have Canada against the Czech Republic, and in the bronze medal, it'll be Sweden against Germany. A little confusing, but that's what's happening with seniors. The good news is we have a Canadian team in the final of the men's side of the equation.
I'm sweating here. I got a towel off. I'm trying to follow it. Okay. My brain's exploding. I was sort of repeating, okay, that guy, yeah, okay, Yeah, next thing I know, I collapsed. I fell out of my chair. I pulled a kidney, Kevin.
It's difficult because if I went in and just started talking about the playoffs, you wouldn't know where the hell it came from. So
I know. Oh, well.
In Pool A in the men's, I believe there's Turkey was in there. And Pool B, Ireland doing very well, not normally known to be a strong curling nation. And then Nigeria in Pool C. So I love seeing the growth of our sport around the world. And there's no question the sport is just growing in all these nations that traditionally haven't been curling nations, but they're becoming curling nations. And that's fantastic. And I just, you know, I love to see this, and I want to see more and more of it in all these events as we go forward to see nations that are improving and obviously working very hard at the sport and climbing the ladder to the top.
I think the other good one is Czech Republic is playing Canada in the final of the men's seniors. And I can't say for sure, but I don't know if the Czech Republic has ever made a final of any world event before, so this could be the first time for them.
Our high-performance teams aren't hitting the podium, but our amateur teams are. The men are going to be guaranteed silver, of course, right? They're in the final.
Yeah. Well, Wade White's a very good player and has a really strong team. And good luck. Those guys, they're practicing at the Savile all the time, so we wish them good luck, and they're playing well.
Okay, on to an event coming up. Yes. A Grand Slam event, the final one of the year, or the final one of the season. In Olds, it is the Coyote Tractor Champions Cup. Kev, tell us all about it.
Yeah, you know what? Congratulations to Olds being extremely patient. It was planned to be going 3 years ago in 2020, got postponed, 2021, got postponed. Here we go, 2022. So great to see, excited to get there and get things underway. Champions Cup is a little bit different because it's depending on what event you win. So it's not straight off rankings. It's actually off of wins, events that you win. So you've got your regular crew there. Let's start on the ladies' side with Carrie Anderson and Rachel Holman. Now, this is kind of cool. There's been five Champions Cups so far. Rachel's actually won three of them. She won in 2017, 2018, and 2021. So I think she's probably excited to get back to another Champions Cup, trying to win her fourth out of six, which would be crazy. But anyway, so we got Rachel, Anna Hasselborg, Sylvain Terenzoni, Fleury, Jen Jones, two teams from South Korea, Eunjun Kim, for winning, I believe she won in Edmonton, the Savile shootout. And then Eunji Jim will also be there. Corey Christensen, really strong team out of the U.S. Amber Holland, a bit of a blast from the past, coming in. Madeline DuPont for winning, I believe. You know what? I shouldn't guess. I think it was the Baden Masters, though, I think. And then Tabitha Peterson. Here we go, Warren. I'm trying to use my memory, so hopefully I don't get in too much trouble. people thinking of why these teams got in. But anyway, that's the field for the ladies' side. So really good field, but some teams that aren't normally in the Grand Slam mix, which is great. On the men's side, Nikodin, of course, Bruce Mowat, Brad Gushue, Brendan Botcher, Kevin Cooley. But we have Corey Dropkin, the young bucks out of the U.S., that just were in the World Championship. Fantastic. Karsten Sturme is in, which is great. That's a really strong young team coming up, I guess, out of the U of A system. You got Brendan Botcher, who came up with his team out of the U of A system. Then Karsten Sturme, so they're coming through. And then you've also got Ryan Jakes coming up out of the U of A system. I think now Ryan, his team, they got Ryan Jakes at 21 years old. You got Desmond Young, his third at 22. Andrew Giddis at 24 years old and Gabriel Dick at 22 years old. So what terrific to have that young team coming in. John Epping, of course, Gunner, and a team from South Korea and Kim Chang-min is throwing third now, but is holding the broom most of the time. So he'll be skipping and throwing third rocks. And then Brad Jacobs as the sponsor exemption from Coyote. So fantastic field, but there are some new teams, which is exciting. And that's what I really love about the Champions of the Cup is that, yes, it closes off the season, but it's a chance for teams that have won events to get in here and battle with the top teams.
Cream of the crop.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's excellent. Excellent, excellent stuff.
Warren, you got any comments on the Grand Slam?
No, I think, again, as Kevin had mentioned, and just that I'm taking a review here, we've got certainly the best teams in the world with a couple of exceptions are there. So it means it should be a phenomenal week and a great way to end the season.
When's the next Grand Slam after this?
Well, you know, not till next year. This is the end of the season.
So there we go. That'll be a wrap on the season, the Coyote Tractor Champions Cup. And then it'll take some time off. You don't need time off, Kevin. Okay? You've had nothing but time over these last few months, okay? Warren and I have been working very hard.
First Grand Slam event of next year, October 4th to 9th in North Bay, Ontario, the Boost National. So that's a really good spot. That's curling country in North Bay. Fans are fantastic there. Hey, one little thing with the Champions Cup on the men's side, Jim.
Yes.
Is they've had the event five times. You've actually had five different champions. On the men's side, I told you Rachel's won the women's three times. Mm-hmm. Crothers won it first time in 16, Jacobs in 17, Gushue in 18, Botcher in 19, Bruce Mowat in 21. So that's pretty cool. Not very often do you see these big events and it's a different team every time.
I don't recognize any of those names.
Yeah, exactly. Unknown.
They haven't done much, have they, in the curling world? Okay, Kev, you sat down with Kevin Cooey in an interview, and I listened to it. And we'll have a listen here, folks, and then we'll come back and make some comments on it.
Kevin, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Let's start with a little bit of the background for you. Most people know your dad, Fred, Jamie, Gary, and the family come from curling. But when did you start? And was it in Yellowknife?
You know what? It's a funny question. I actually don't even really know how old I was when I started. I don't think I started young these days compared to what kids are doing. I think I was probably around 12, and it was actually way up in Inuvik the first time I threw. We lived there for a few years. Didn't really take it up much then. Moved to Yellowknife, and that's where I really kind of took it up with a passion.
I didn't know that.
Not many people know where that even is.
So then you ended up coming to Calgary after juniors. When was that?
Yeah, I came down to go to university at University of Calgary, and I just never left, you know, with lots of job opportunities back in NWT. But if you kind of go back there, you're never going to get out. And, you know, it's not, I wanted to curl, and living up there is not conducive to curling at the highest levels, which that time I kind of wanted to do. So it's been awesome. I love Calgary, Alberta. It's been my home forever, and it's worked out well.
Well, you put a great team together. You were young when we first played you in that Players' Championship. It was you and John, maybe Mark Kennedy on the team too? Maybe not. What was that first competitive team you had? We played each other.
Played with my brother and Scott Cripps and Mike Westland, and we had some good games at Provincials. And then, yeah, and eventually I played with Johnny Mowen, Mark Kennedy, and Paul Moffitt.
And that's when you beat us in the
Players, yeah. And I think we played together 2 or 3 years, and, you know, we had decent years, but as you know as well as anyone, Alberta is a tough place to get out of, right?
Yes, and still is today. When you look back at curling, I'd love to hear from behind your eyes the biggest changes that you've seen in our sport.
Probably two things, athleticism as far as the sweeping. I mean, the sweeping these days compared to the old days is crazy. You know, part of that is knowing how to sweep too. I mean, remember when we used to play and had no clue how we were sweeping, right? I mean, if a guy could have figured that out 20 years ago, I mean, you know, could have won some games. But and then, you know, just the what it takes to win. Back 15 years ago, kind of maybe show up and win a lot of your games, and now that's, you know, it's way harder. Just across the world, the world teams are so much better.
How to win. So part of that is sponsorship and the business model, and you've done very well that way. From that side of things, how do you set up your business with the curling part on the ice and, of course, off the ice?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, we've been very successful on the ice and off the ice with sponsors, and, you know, you have to have something to give to the sponsors. You know, they don't just give you money, right? They want something out of it. And I feel like we've given back over the years and represented their brands as well. But, you know, I would love to just curl at the same time, kept a full-time job. And it's tough. You know, you got to keep winning to keep the sponsors, and you got to win to get the sponsors. So, you know, I've been fortunate. Curling is treated me awesome, and I got no regrets.
Let's talk about the next 4 years, the next Olympic cycle. That seems to be, Kevin, kind of the way everybody works these days. You're still playing with the old team for the next couple of events till the end of the season, which makes sense. Let's talk about your new team and how did it come together? I love the fact there's a young person on it. Who's the new team and how did it get together?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be playing with, you know, obviously someone you know well, and your son and Brad Thiessen and Tyler Tardy, and I'm looking forward to it. For me, it'll be a totally different team than what I've had, you know, kind of some more quiet individuals, and probably give me a little more chance to kind of take charge, which is probably something I should do. But, you know, I'm looking forward to it. Not many people know Tyler, but his junior success speaks for itself. And Brad and Carrick, their resume is exceptional as well. So good Alberta-based team, and I think our personalities will work well together.
I'm really excited about it. And the reason is, from my point of view, being a curling fan, I am super excited that Tyler Tardy, who I think the world of, like he's like a phenom, a young phenom coming up. And it's been hard for people like that to really grow in the sport quickly. And I'm super stoked to watch him underneath like your leadership and be able to gain all this experience quickly. What kind of time frame are you looking at, or are you thinking about being able to get this team on stride?
I don't know. That's a tough one. I mean, I definitely don't think we're going to panic if we don't have a couple of good events right out of the gates like some teams would. But like you said, he's a phenom. He's won so much. I like that he came and played a couple years of men's, and that he wants to come and learn and play with an experienced team. I think that'll work for the three of us, especially to have someone like that.
Length of season, I need to ask you about that, because you've got a young guy. Well, I can't even call Carrick and Brad young anymore. They're pretty experienced.
Maybe I'm just old.
But you got Tyler, who's definitely young. And you're at the other end. So length of season and how many games and your strategy as far as season setup?
Yeah, it's hard to complain, because we're fortunate to be playing in these great events, right? The Players' Championship, the Champions Cup. I mean, very lucky. But at the same time, yeah, it's September to May, so much longer than it used to be. But if you're doing good, you're playing lots, and that's what you want to do, right? So, like I said, no complaints, but it gets lengthy, and especially towards the end of the season when you barely have ice, it's a bit of a crapshoot at the end, right? You know, I think this week will be awesome, and the Champions Cup, who knows?
One, though, that I do want to talk to you about, because you've been in, I don't know how many major events, lots. The length of the events. We just watched Brad and Nick play 15 games in a few days. Now they're here. They just played Sunday night, and only just a few hours later, they're back on the ice here in Toronto. So is there some way that in your mind that we can have champions crowned quicker.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, that event was a bit of a foregone conclusion, right? You could have played that game. You knew who was going to be in that final right from the start, especially with, you know, Mowat not being there. You know, I've been fortunate to come from, you know, some worlds to the players, and it's fun. I'm sure they're not complaining, right? They're kind of free rolling, and you know what? They're probably tired, but they're in game form, and they're going to do well just because of that, versus a lot of us have not played many games in, you know, the last couple months.
One other thing that I've talked to quite a few of the players about, and that's the playoff systems at various events. Do you think that there's some sort of a need to sort of keep it somewhat similar at events, or how do you view the various, so many varieties of playoffs in our sport?
I do think some change is good, to have some different formats along the year, for sure, but it should be distinct in my view. You know, this event is going to be this way and this way, and you know, you have your favorites and you have some that you think are stupid. I mean, let's be honest, but at the end of the day, the playoffs should be similar, but you know, I think variety is good.
Yeah, no problem with that at all. I kind of agree. You know, we when we used to play in the triple knockouts versus round robin events, somebody like Ed Lukwich, we're going back a few years now, and Ed Lukwich and Kerry Burtnick, Pat Ryan, these guys were good at coming through C. They'd come through C, and oh my goodness, they get rolling. Whereas, like our team, if we didn't come out A, we weren't coming out, and that was just the way it was. But I loved round robins, much better at that. But for some reason, Kerry Burton would lose his first couple, and he's out of the round robin before he started. So do you have a preference when you come to events, be it triple knockout, double knockout, round robin? Is there one system that you like better than others, or that you're more comfortable with, I should say?
Yay. I've come out of C lots in my life too, right? I think I won two of my Briars coming out of the C event from Alberta Provincials, which is a triple. I think the triple is the fairest because every game matters, versus some round robins, you know, probably at least half the games are meaningless. So, like I said, I think most events should be triple where every game matters, but it is good to have some round robin events or just different formats just to change it up.
Sounds good. Kevin, good luck this week. Thanks a lot. Appreciate the time.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Good interview with Kevin Cooey. Sometimes it's like trying to get water out of a rock, you know, but Kev, you did a great job getting him to open up about it. The most interesting thing I thought, Kevin and Warren, was you asked him about the playoff formats, Kevin, which one he likes, because there's many. He kind of half chuckled. He was a little ambivalent, but in the end, he likes the triple round knockout. And Warren, you've always said that's too long, you know, for a lot of these events. But he just thought it was the fairest way, Kevin. He's won a few events coming from the seaside.
Well, Kevin is kind of famous, actually, for maybe coming into an event and not playing as well early. But once Kevin gets going, Cooey, he's tough. When you get the end of a round robin, or in the case of a triple knockout, going through C, playing more games than everybody else, learning the ice more, the rocks more, he just gets in a rhythm and gets incredibly tough to beat. But, you know, I agree with Kevin as far as fairness goes. Now, it's kind of tricky from a broadcast and organizational standpoint, the triple, because you don't know when your favorite teams are going to play necessarily, because it changes if you win or lose as to when your next game is. Whereas in a round robin, you know your first five or six or seven games exactly when you're going to play. They're preset before the event starts.
Right.
So then as a fan, if you want to go watch Jennifer Jones, you know that she plays this game, this game, this game, this game, this game.
Good point.
And sometimes you might even know which sheet. So when you get to the building, you know which side of the building you even want to go to sit on, so you're near the team you really enjoy. So that's kind of the best part about the round robin. Whereas the triple, though, fairness-wise, you're never playing a meaningless game. Every game, the teams are still at the same position, be it if you're in A, B, or C. Mm-hmm. The team you're playing against is in the same position as you, which is, you know, very fair.
Warren, what do you think of the interview?
Well, let's talk about the playoffs, and I agree with what Kevin's saying. The triple knockout, without question, from a timing point of view, is the best approach, because you can, as with the slam does, run off two groups of 16 in pretty much a five-day period, pretty clean. But as Kevin suggests, it's unpredictable. You never know who's playing when. Each team has three lives, which gives them a little assurance of being around for a while, but somebody can still have a bit of an off start and be gone very quickly. So it's got that element in it, but I think from a player's point of view, it is a very fair approach, and it's one I think probably most of them would prefer. The round-robin approach takes longer, and of course, it's a little more, I think, of an entertainment factor because, as Kevin suggests, it's predictable. You knew who's playing when and against whom, and so if you're a spectator or a television viewer, you can kind of plan who you're going to watch when. So from that angle, it's probably a little better, but I think certainly from a timing point of view, the triple knockout is the quickest. And I think when you're running things like Grand Slam, it's the most appropriate thing to be doing. I think when you get into Canadian National Championships, probably the round robin format is probably what you're pretty much forced to use.
Kevin, I thought you had asked him what, you know, about the big difference from when he was curling. He said, Warren, I started late, man. I was 12. Right? Back then, and I thought that was kind of amazing, right? It's like, I didn't do it like the kids are today, starting at 5 or 6 years old. Yeah, and for 3 years, he said that he lived in Inuvik.
That's the home of Nick Saturnino. We've had Nick on the show, who runs just a fantastic curling program up in Inuvik. So, yeah, it makes sense, I guess. You're from Inuvik, you'd be a good curler.
Well, until Kevin said, if you want to go anywhere in curling, you got to get out of there. That's what he said in the interview. Anyway, great job. Of course, Kevin's world-class curler and right now not slowing down at all. So I might see you down in Olds. I might jump in the car. I was going to phone you today, Martin, and ask you if you wanted to go play golf. And I looking outside going, maybe we should go snowshoeing or sharpen our skis. It's still cold here, Hanson. Okay, you're okay though, aren't you?
We're sort of okay. It's been a cool spring here in BC.
Oh, shut up. Yeah. Thanks a lot, everyone, for tuning into this special episode of Inside Curling, brought to you by Sports Interaction, Coyote Tractor, and of course, they got the event on this week in Olds. Thank you to Goldline, Nestle Boost, and Meridian for bringing you this special edition of Inside Curling. You want to email us, do it at insidecurling@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you because we get a lot out of them. And if we read your email, you're going to get a copy of Warren's book, Sticks and Stones, all about curling in the Olympics. Off you go, fellas. Great show. Thanks for all your input. And thanks for everyone for listening. And we'll talk to you next time on Inside Curling. See you, Kevin. See you, Warren.
Hey, thanks, Jimmy.
Thanks, Jim.